A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. Imagine you've time-traveled to a medieval feast. You sit down expecting a plate and fork, and instead someone hands you a slab of stale bread and says, "That's your plate." You eat with your hands and a shared knife, and if you're lucky, there's a spoon for the soup. The question is, how recent is our modern knife-fork-plate setup, really? And if you could drop into different moments in history, what would you actually find people eating with?
This is one of those topics where the answer is so much weirder than most people assume. We think of the fork and plate as ancient, obvious inventions, but for the vast majority of human history, neither existed. The spoon is the only truly ancient tool at the Western table, and even that was rare for everyday people until surprisingly recently.
I love how confidently wrong we all are about this. You walk into a restaurant, there's a fork wrapped in a napkin, and your brain says, "This is how it's always been. 300 years ago, you'd be the weirdo for wanting your own eating prongs."
And here's the scope we're dealing with. Spoons go back to the Paleolithic. We found carved bone spoons from 20,000 years ago. Chopsticks emerged in China around 1200 BCE, originally as cooking tools before they migrated to the table. But the fork? The fork is a baby. It didn't show up in Europe in any meaningful way until about 1,000 years ago, and it took another 7 centuries to become standard.
A baby with a serious PR problem, which we'll get to. But first, let's talk about what came before all of this, because the pre-cutlery world was not the chaotic free-for-all people imagine. It had its own logic.
The key thing to understand is that for most of human history, eating was communal in a way that would feel almost intrusive to us now. You didn't have your own plate, your own utensils, your own defined space. The ancient Greeks and Romans ate reclining on couches, the triclinium setup reaching into shared platters with their hands. Bread functioned as both food and tool. You tear off a piece, use it to scoop up meat or sauce, and eat the whole thing.
The edible spoon, basically, which is more elegant than it sounds. You're not left with a dirty utensil, you've just consumed your delivery mechanism. Zero waste dining, centuries before anyone cared about sustainability.
They did have spoons. The Romans made them from bronze, silver, even bone. The Latin word cochlearium referred to a small spoon with a pointed handle, specifically for eating shellfish and eggs. But these weren't at every place setting. You'd have maybe one or two spoons for a whole table, used for soups and stews. Everything else was fingers and bread.
If I drop into a Roman dinner party in, say, the first century, I'm reclining on a couch, reaching into shared dishes, using bread as my scoop, maybe fighting someone for the one spoon when the broth course arrives. No individual plate. And this is the civilized world. This is Rome at its height.
It stayed that way for a remarkably long time, which brings us to the trencher.
This is the part I genuinely love. The trencher is such an elegant solution to a problem most people don't even think about. What do you put your food on when you don't have plates and you don't want to eat directly off the table? Answer: you make the plate out of food.
Here's the specifics. A trencher was typically made from bread that was 4 days old, intentionally stale, sliced into slabs about 6 inches wide and 1 inch thick. The staleness was critical. Fresh bread would disintegrate under hot juices and sauces. Stale bread absorbed them without falling apart, creating this functional, edible surface that could hold a meal for the duration of a feast.
The word itself, trencher, comes from the old French trencher, meaning to cut or slice. It was literally a slice of bread repurposed as dishware. The same root gives us trench, a cut in the earth. Language preserving the memory of what we used to eat off of.
That's a lovely connection. And what's fascinating is that trenchers weren't poverty food. They were standard at royal tables. Medieval banquet records show trenchers being prepared by dedicated bakers, sometimes made from whole wheat or even finer flours for higher status diners. At a great hall feast, you'd have a trencher placed in front of you, or more commonly, between you and another diner, because two people typically shared one.
Wait, shared a trencher? You and some random knight are eating off the same slab of bread?
not random. You'd be paired with someone of similar rank. But yes, shared. The phrase trencher mate entered English to mean a close companion, someone you literally broke bread with. It's where we get the deeper resonance of breaking bread as an act of fellowship.
The modern romantic dinner where couples share a dessert plate. That's actually a medieval throwback. We've been unconsciously recreating the trencher system on date night.
Here's the sustainability angle that's impressive. After the meal, the trencher had soaked up all the juices and sauces from the food. It was now a rich, flavorful piece of bread. The diner could eat it, though at formal banquets that was considered a bit gauche. More commonly, trenchers were collected and given to the poor as alms or thrown to the dogs. Either way, no dishes to wash. The entire serving vessel was either consumed or distributed. Compare that to modern disposable plates that sit in landfills for centuries.
It's actually a better system, materially speaking. The trencher is a plate that becomes food or animal feed. Modern disposable plates are petroleum products, shaped like plates that become permanent garbage. We invented a worse version of the medieval solution and called it progress.
Trenchers persisted for centuries. From roughly the year 1000 through the 1600s, this was the standard across Europe. Wooden trenchers existed too, literally flat wooden boards. But the bread version was more common because it eliminated cleanup entirely. You'd have a personal knife, which you brought yourself, and you'd use that to cut meat and spear it to your mouth. That's the entire tool set for most of the medieval period. A personal knife, a shared trencher, maybe a shared spoon, and your hands.
The knife was the one personal item. Everyone carried their own eating knife. Which makes sense. In a world where you might need to defend yourself, your eating knife and your weapon were the same object.
Which becomes a problem, and we'll get to that. But first, let's talk about the fork, because the fork story is one of the strangest technology adoption curves in human history.
The fork is the Bluetooth of cutlery. Invented, ignored for centuries, suddenly everywhere.
The first documented forks appeared in the Byzantine Empire around the 10th or 11th century. They were small, two-tined implements used primarily for eating candied fruits and other sticky foods that would stain the fingers. The pivotal moment for the fork's introduction to Western Europe came in the year 1004 or 1005, depending on the source, when a Byzantine princess named Theophanu married the son of the Doge of Venice.
Let's make sure we pronounce that right for anyone who wants to look her up later. And she brought forks in her dowry?
Golden forks, specifically. And the Venetian clergy lost their minds. They declared the fork an offense against God. The argument was theological. God gave humans fingers for eating. Using a metal prong instead was an insult to divine provision, an act of sinful vanity. When Theophanu died of the plague shortly after, some accounts say within 2 years, clergy pointed to her fork use as evidence of divine judgment.
Of course they did. Woman uses fork, gets plague. Clearly God hates cutlery. The logic is impeccable if you already hate the conclusion.
This wasn't fringe opinion. The fork was widely condemned as effeminate, decadent, and vaguely heretical for centuries. In the 11th century, a hermit monk named Peter Damian wrote a treatise condemning a Byzantine-born Venetian noblewoman for using a fork, describing it as a decadent Eastern perversion. The fork was literally a culture war issue.
The fork is moral panic, which feels absurd now. But if you think about it, every new eating technology faces some version of this. There were people who thought microwave ovens would irradiate your food into poison. The fork just had a longer run of bad press.
The fork remained a Mediterranean curiosity for hundreds of years. It spread through Italy. Italians adopted it earlier than anyone else in Europe, partly because pasta is hard to eat with just a knife and fingers. By the 1500s, Italian nobility were using forks regularly. But in England, France, and Germany? Still hands and knives.
This is where Thomas Coriat enters the story.
An English traveler and writer who published a book in 1611 called Coriat's Crudities, a travelogue of his journey through Europe. He described Italian fork use with the tone of someone reporting on an alien civilization. He wrote that Italians cannot endure to have their dish touched with fingers, seeing all men's fingers are not alike clean. And he noted that the fork was used to hold meat steady while cutting, and then to convey food to the mouth.
That quote, "all men's fingers are not alike clean," is doing a lot of work. It's both the practical hygiene argument for the fork and a subtle class jab. The fork is saying, I don't know where your hands have been, and I don't want your fingers in the shared dish. It's a technology of social distancing.
Coryat brought forks back to England and was immediately mocked. His friends called him Furcifer, Latin for fork-bearer, but also meaning scoundrel or gallows, bird. A pun at his expense. The fork was seen as pretentious, foreign, and unmanly. It took until the mid-1700s for the fork to become standard in England, and even later in rural areas and among the working class.
We're talking about a technology that was available in Europe from the year 1004 and didn't become universal until the 1700s. That's a 700-year adoption curve. For comparison, smartphones went from zero to global saturation in about 15 years. The fork is the slowest technology rollout in human history that actually succeeded.
It succeeded for specific reasons. The rise of the fork tracks with the rise of the individual plate. Once you're not eating off a shared trencher, once you have your own defined space at the table, the fork makes more sense. The two technologies co-evolved.
Right. Let's talk about the plate revolution, because this is the piece most people never think about. When did we start eating off individual ceramic plates?
The shift from trenchers to individual plates happened in the 16th and 17th centuries, and it was driven by two things, porcelain and cleanliness. Chinese porcelain started arriving in Europe in significant quantities through Portuguese trade routes in the 1500s. It was beautiful, durable, and, crucially, non-porous. Unlike wooden trenchers or earthenware, porcelain didn't absorb grease and bacteria.
The plate is partly a hygiene technology. The trencher absorbs everything, which is fine if you're eating it or giving it away immediately. But if you want a surface that can be cleaned and reused, you need something non-porous.
And European potters couldn't replicate Chinese porcelain for centuries. The formula for kaolin clay and high-temperature firing was a closely guarded secret, so Europe developed alternatives. Tin-glazed earthenware, what the Italians called maiolica, and the Dutch called Delftware, created a white, non-porous surface that mimicked porcelain at a lower cost. By the 1600s, individual plates were becoming standard at wealthy tables across Europe.
This is when the word trencher shifts meaning. It stops referring to a bread plate and starts referring to a wooden cutting board, which is what a trencher is in modern English, if you encounter the word at all. The technology got demoted from plate to prep surface.
A perfect example of semantic narrowing. The object persists, but in a reduced role, and the word follows it down. Now we're in the 1700s, and we have the fork, the individual plate, and the personal knife. The place setting is starting to look familiar. But there's one more transformation needed, and it involves a cardinal with a stabbing problem.
One of my favorite historical figures, because he's always showing up in these stories as the guy who looked at a chaotic situation and said, "What if we added some rules?"
Richelieu was the chief minister to King Louis XIII of France, and he was a master of statecraft and social engineering. The story goes that he was hosting a dinner and watched a guest pick his teeth with the point of his knife, the same knife everyone used for eating. Richelieu was so disgusted that he ordered all the knives in his household to have their points rounded off.
That's the polite version of the story. The less polite version, which I've seen in several sources, is that he was tired of dinner guests using their eating knives to stab each other. Table knives in the 1600s were pointed, sharp, and perfectly capable of being used as weapons. Fights broke out at banquets. Richelieu's rounded knife decree in 1637 was essentially an early food safety regulation with a side of violence prevention.
The rounded table knife became the standard across France and then across Europe. The knife transformed from a multi-purpose tool weapon into a specialized eating implement. You could no longer stab someone with your dinner knife, at least not easily, which changed the entire atmosphere of formal dining.
The butter knife is a demilitarized zone. Richelieu disarmed the dinner table.
This connects to the broader civilizing process that the sociologist Norbert Elias wrote about. Table manners, cutlery, individual plates, these are all technologies of self-restraint. They create distance between diners. They reduce the visibility of bodily functions. They impose order on what was previously a more chaotic, embodied, communal experience. The fork says, "Don't touch the food." The plate says, "This is mine, that is yours." The rounded knife says, we are not going to stab each other tonight.
Which brings us to the Industrial Revolution, and the moment cutlery actually became accessible to ordinary people. Because up to this point, everything we've described is mostly for the wealthy. The average peasant in 1700 is still eating with a wooden spoon, a shared pot, and their hands.
The democratization of cutlery happened through metallurgy. Sheffield, England became the center of steel production in the 1740s with the invention of the crucible steel process. By 1800, Sheffield was producing over 100,000 tons of steel annually. This drove down the cost of knives and forks dramatically. Then, in the 1840s, the Elkington brothers in Birmingham patented electroplating, a process that deposited a thin layer of silver onto a base metal. Suddenly, you could have what looked like a silver plate setting for a fraction of the cost.
The IKEA effect, Victorian edition. Mass production creating the illusion of luxury at a middle-class price point. And this is when the matching cutlery set becomes a marker of respectability.
By 1900, a complete plate setting. Knife, fork, spoon, plate, napkin was expected in any middle-class home across Europe and North America. Etiquette manuals codified exactly how each piece should be arranged, which fork for which course, which side the knife goes on. The French court of the 18th century had formalized these rules, and they spread through colonialism, through aspirational imitation, through the machinery of empire.
Let's do the time travel tour properly. If I drop into different moments in history, what am I eating with?
Ancient Rome, 1st century CE. You're reclining on a couch in a triclinium. Food arrives on large shared platters. You have no individual plate. You use your fingers and pieces of bread to scoop food. There might be one or two bronze spoons for the table, used for soups and sauces. You probably brought your own knife. No fork exists in this world.
Jump forward to a medieval English hall around 1200. What's in front of me?
A bread trencher shared with one other diner. Your personal knife which you brought. A shared cup for drinking passed around. A shared spoon for the pottage. Napkins exist. They're large cloth draped over your shoulder, but they're also shared. You eat with your hands, using your knife to cut meat and spear it to your mouth. The dog under the table is waiting for your trencher scraps.
Renaissance Italy, 1550.
Now we're getting somewhere. You have a personal plate, likely tin-glazed earthenware. A fork, two-tined, small for holding meat while cutting and for eating foods like pasta, a personal knife. This is the most advanced table in Europe at this point. If you're in England or Germany at the same time, you're still using fingers and wondering what's wrong with Italians.
French court, 1750.
The full place setting as we'd recognize it. Individual ceramic plate. Rounded knife on the right, fork on the left, spoon above the plate, multiple courses with different utensils. Strict rules about which hand holds what. The fork now has three or four tines. The two-tined fork was still primarily a spearing tool, but three and four tines allowed scooping. This is essentially modern dining.
Victorian England, 1880.
You might have a dozen different forks. Fish fork, salad fork, dinner fork, dessert fork, oyster fork. Specialized knives for fish, for butter, for cheese. The full silver service is a status display. The serrated knife has been patented. Joseph E. De La Bastide filed his patent in 1869, specifically designed for cutting tomatoes without crushing them. That's a detail I love. The serrated knife was invented for tomatoes.
Because tomatoes are structurally annoying. The skin resists a straight blade, and the interior collapses under pressure. You need a sawing action to get through the skin without destroying everything underneath. The tomato forced an innovation in cutlery.
That's such a good metaphor for how these technologies actually develop. It's not a grand plan. It's specific problems. Tomatoes, stabbings, sticky fingers, creating specific solutions that accumulate over centuries into what we now think of as normal.
The modern dinner table, which feels timeless and inevitable, is actually a stack of historical accidents. A Byzantine princess's dowry, a cardinal's disgust, a tomato's structural integrity, and a Birmingham factory's electroplating process. None of this had to happen this way.
Most of the world still eats differently. Chopsticks dominate East Asia. In much of South Asia, the Middle East, and Africa, eating with hands, specifically the right hand, remains standard, using flatbreads as scoops in a way that directly echoes the medieval trencher system. The fork-knife-plate triad is a Western European invention that spread through colonialism and globalization, but it's not universal, and it's not ancient.
Which is worth sitting with for a moment. when we judge other dining cultures as less advanced because they don't use forks, we're revealing our own historical ignorance. Eating with your hands, using bread as a utensil, sharing from communal dishes, this is how most humans ate for most of history. The individual place setting is the outlier.
There is an argument that the trencher system was actually more sophisticated in some ways than modern disposable dining. Think about a paper plate. It serves one function, holding food, and then becomes waste. A trencher served multiple functions: plate, flavor absorber, post-meal food for the poor, dog food. It was a cascading use system that extracted maximum value from a single piece of bread.
There are startups doing this now. Edible cups, edible plates, edible packaging. They pitch it as futuristic eco-innovation, but they're literally reinventing the trencher. The medieval solution, rebranded for the climate-conscious consumer.
The past isn't behind us. It's just waiting to be rediscovered by someone with good marketing. And I think there's a real question here about whether our current system survives another 300 years. Look at how we actually eat now. Delivery culture means a lot of meals are eaten directly from containers, often with just a single fork or spoon. Handheld foods, burritos, sandwiches, wraps, burgers, eliminate cutlery entirely. Meal replacement shakes eliminate the plate. The formal place setting is increasingly a special occasion artifact, not a daily reality.
The knife and fork might be peaking right now, historically speaking, or they might have already peaked. The trencher lasted about 600 years as the standard. The fork has been standard for maybe 250. These technologies don't last forever.
There's lab-grown meat, 3D printed food, edible packaging. The material basis of a meal is changing. If your steak is printed directly onto an edible carbohydrate plate, you don't need a knife to cut it or a fork to hold it. You just eat the whole object. We might be moving toward a future where the food and the serving vessel merge back together, which is exactly what the trencher was.
From bread plate to ceramic plate, and back to bread plate. History doesn't repeat, but it does rhyme, especially when the rhyme is about eliminating dishwashing.
Here's what I'd suggest to anyone listening. Try eating one meal this week with just a spoon and your hands. No fork, no knife, no plate, or a piece of flatbread as your plate. Not as a gimmick, but as a way to feel how deeply you've internalized the fork-knife-plate system. Notice which foods suddenly become awkward. Notice the impulse to reach for a fork that isn't there. It's a small behavioral experiment that reveals how much of normal is just historical sediment.
The next time you set a table, recognize that you're participating in a tradition that's only about 300 years old. Most humans who ever lived never saw a fork. Most meals in human history were eaten without individual plates. What feels like basic civilization is actually a very specific, very recent, very contingent arrangement.
It also makes you wonder what everyday objects we use now that will seem as bizarre to future humans as the trencher seems to us. What's the 21st century equivalent of bringing your own knife to dinner and eating off stale bread? The single-use coffee pod? The smartphone we cradle while we eat? Something will look ridiculous in retrospect, we just can't see it yet.
The Nespresso pod is the trencher of the 21st century. A thing we think is normal, that future archaeologists will explain in museum placards while school children giggle.
That's the deeper point. Every generation thinks its way of doing things is the final, correct way. But dining norms have always been in flux, and they still are. The fork took 700 years to catch on. The plate as we know it is younger than the printing press. The rounded knife exists because a cardinal was grossed out by toothpicking. None of this was planned, none of it was inevitable, and none of it is permanent.
Which is honestly reassuring. The things that feel most fixed are often the most contingent. Your dinner table is a museum of historical accidents, and you don't even notice.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1780s, a British naturalist in Somaliland documented that the venom of the puff adder could coagulate a pint of ox blood in under 6 seconds, roughly the same time it takes a modern microwave to bring a cup of water to a rolling boil.
Right. That's a comparison I didn't need, but now can't forget. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for making this show possible, and thanks to everyone who sends in these questions. This one was a genuine pleasure to dig into. If you've got a weird prompt of your own, head to myweirdprompts.com and send it our way. We'll be back soon with more.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.